We're now going to continue with a series of conversations that we've been having over the last few weeks about the really important trial that's opened down at Guantanamo Bay, the trial of Salim Hamdan, who's alleged to be Osama bin Laden's former driver and is at the center of the at least justice element of the war on terror. The trial is going on down at Guantanamo. We've had a number of discussions about what's gone on in the courtroom. Joining us now is Jonathan Mahler, who's an author and New York Times contributing writer, and his book, The Challenge, Hamdan v. Rumsfeld and the Fight Over Presidential Power, comes out next month. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
You know, you have a piece in this Sunday's New York Times which makes some compelling sort of broad statements about the significance of this trial, but I want to begin with, did you think when you got involved in this particular case that it would have the significance that it's coming to have and it seems to be having now?
I actually really had no idea. I mean, the book grew out of a story I wrote for the Times Magazine back in the spring of 2004, and the story was in fact a profile of the Navy lawyer, the JAG lawyer, who was appointed by the Pentagon to represent Hamdan.
It's Commander Swift?
Exactly, Lieutenant Commander Charlie Swift, who's since left the military after not getting promoted.
Who is an amazing character.
Yeah, he's a great figure, and I wrote this profile of him. He was just an incredibly compelling guy. He was a graduate of the Naval Academy, sort of struggled through the Naval Academy, but then sort of found his way, went to not an elite law school, and sort of struggled through law school, but really kind of came into his own as a defense lawyer in the military, and was just an incredibly zealous defense lawyer who got very close to his clients. And so I was just so interested in his relationship with Hamdan, this idea that a Navy officer would have to kind of earn the trust of an accused terrorist, not just an accused terrorist, someone who had worked directly for bin Laden.
But also to take this on as a cause and challenge
Absolutely.
The entire government.
It really was the end of his military career, obviously, among other things, including his marriage. But it was. But when I got involved, I was really mostly sort of caught up in that element of it. And at the time, they had just he and this law professor at Georgetown, Neil Katyal, constitutional law professor, whom Swift had brought on board, had just filed suit against the government over the lawfulness of these military tribunals. But back in 2004, it didn't even look like the federal courts were going to even be able to hear challenges from Guantanamo. So,
and now it's made it to the Supreme Court. There
exactly.
have been any number of challenges. There's a parallel case of Hamdan in federal court as well as the military tribunal. Jonathan, you know, we've been checking in with the actual proceedings of the trial all this week, and Ben Wisner of the ACLU delivered an impression yesterday that I wanted to ask you about. He thought that in the court proceedings, it appeared as though Hamdan started out as a cooperative witness for the prosecution and the Bush administration, and that they eventually decided to just kind of bail on whatever evidence he was giving them to convict others and just sort of convict him, go after him, cannibalize their own witness.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, during the course of my research for the book, I interviewed at length his Hamdan sort of lead FBI interrogator, Ali Soufan, who was also sort of the FBI's kind of foremost expert on al-Qaeda. And Soufan, you know, built a relationship with Hamdan and got a lot of information from him, a lot of intelligence from him. And it was his impression and his hope that the government would actually use him as a witness, get him to offer a guilty plea in exchange for cooperation, and that they would use him as a witness during the trials of some of the bigger fish, the sort of more senior al-Qaeda leaders. But instead, the United States actually decided to try Hamdan himself. So I think that came as a big surprise to him. Yeah.
What's your impression? Is Hamdan a bad guy?
Well, certainly, it's indisputable that he was a driver for bin Laden, there are other issues that are, and also I think one can pretty safely say that he was some sort of bodyguard. He was driving bin Laden. He was carrying a weapon. And then you have a lot of issues that are in dispute about whether he swore an oath of loyalty to bin Laden. It's quite possible that he did. I don't have the impression that he was at all involved in any specific attacks or that he was necessarily, totally committed to the cause. So mm-hmm. I guess I would say, in answer to that question, yes, I think he's guilty to an extent, for sure. But do I think that he's the appropriate defendant for America's first war crimes trial since World War II? War II, and sort of a symbol of the sort of the power of the rule of law, the right guy to be putting on trial right now. I'm not sure he is.
And Jonathan, I'm glad you said exactly that, because that would be my question. His link to Osama bin Laden, clearly there is one. How high does it go and how significant is it? Seems to be really overshadowed by the questions of the Bush administration's policy and notion of executive power in triggering these military tribunals in which they've been rebuked three times by the Supreme Court.
Right. That's the real problem. I mean, the real problem is that, you know, we're now 7 years removed from 9/11, and nearly 7 years removed from the authorization of these military tribunals. They've been tied up in procedural wrangling because the Bush administration insisted on not getting Congress's buy-in, insisted on keeping them out of the reach of the federal courts, so that the federal courts couldn't sign off on these on the rules of these tribunals. And so, you know, basically what you have at this point is you know, nothing like what we had at Nuremberg, which was this you know, this great monument to the rule of law, and as the chief prosecutor Robert Jackson called it, a sort of a symbol to the triumph of reason over power.
Well, this is what's so compelling about your book and really the piece in this Sunday's New York Times, because you raise what is essentially the puzzle of the entire post 9/11 era for the Bush administration. You know, Nuremberg was consensus, was a world-seeking closure from horrible events.
Right.
This is such a sideshow. There's no consensus. What are they doing? What do they think they're doing? Do you have any insight?
The problem is that I think you're exactly right, and the problem is that, you know, here we are talking about whether these trials are fair or not, and discussing all the kind of missteps that the Bush administration made along the way, when what's happening, you know, in theory, what we should be talking about is the trial of the perpetrators of the greatest attack on American soil in U.S. history,
right,
and the nation's this historic war crimes trial, which hasn't taken place since World War II, and we're not. We're wondering, are these fair? Is this guy really guilty? Is he worthy of being subjected to this kind of trial? Does he deserve more rights?
And Jonathan, you know, not even fairness in the big picture. We're looking at fairness at every step. Were they fairly rendition? Were they fairly taken, potentially,
you know,
him or others? Were they fairly interrogated? It's like every element of it.
Right. I mean, you figure that you know, this is the first guy they're going to put on trial. You have to assume, and in fact, I did talk to his very first prosecutor who chose Hamdan, that he looked, his profile was pretty good, like his treatment was pretty good. If he's the first guy America's going to put on trial, they know he's the one who's going to get the most attention. And evidence has already been disallowed. Evidence has already been barred. The very first day, the judge barred some of his statements because they'd been coerced.
John, we've got to move on, but I just want to leave with this one fabulous story from your book. Can you tell me the story of what Commander Swift, the defense attorney for Hamdan, said to the senators that inspired the editorial in the New York Times, "Who We Are"?
Yes.
Well, quickly.
What Swift said was essentially that. What he said was during a hearing in the summer of 2005, you know, after Abu Ghraib and during the whole debate over Guantanamo, he said, this isn't about them. This is about us. This is about who we are. And I think we're seeing that sort of every day on Guantanamo.
Our trials in the United States reflect who we are. This commander who thought his military career was over, and he raised a constitutional issue that resonates all throughout the nation today. Jonathan Mahler, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Jonathan Mahler is the author and New York Times contributing writer of the book, The Challenge, Hamdan v. Rumsfeld and the Fight Over Presidential Power. Now, headlines from Femi, okay?
Thanks, John. Just coming up to 29 minutes past the hour.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.